everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 52. It's great to be here tonight. We are live, as always, on both YouTube and RadioAlbion.com. Radio Albion is run by my good friend Sven Longshanks. It's a great source of nationalist material. And if you want to check stuff out after the show, that is a great place to find more incredible content. So if you're starved for material, if you're bored, if you have nothing to do in the lockdown, the best place to go is RadioAlbion.com, where we stream live every Wednesday, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Now, people have been saying to me, Mark, why are you not on DLive? Well, I am on DLive now. I have my own channel on DLive, and I can stream there. I don't know what to stream there. Should I stream some of my gameplay? Should I do some classic games on DLive just to test it out and talk nonsense as I school you in gaming expertise? I might do some of the hardest Super Nintendo games just to show off. I don't know. We shall see. I might do a poll, actually, and see if people would like that kind of thing. And tonight we do have a packed show. We have Unwashed, who we will be introducing very shortly. But before we get to Unwashed, I want to tell you how you can contribute to the show. If you would like to contribute financially to the show, the best way to do so is through Entropy. The link is in the description. It's on my Telegram. It is on my Twitter, and it is now in the live chat. So that's the best way to contribute to the show. Everyone who sends a super chat will have that super chat read out on the show. You can also ask unpaid questions. That is the best place to ask unpaid questions. I can't see them in the regular YouTube chat, but I can see them on Entropy. And the best questions get voted on and they rise up. And we ask the best questions every week to the relevant people on the panel or to the group, or simply read out statements if it is just a statement that you want read out. So please use Entropy. It is the free speech alternative. They support us being able to talk about the issues we want to talk about. Now, if you want to contribute in other ways, you can contribute via Bitcoin. The Bitcoin address is in the description. You can also contribute in other ways by writing to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, that is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Thefallofwesternman.com. Now, that is very important because every week I get angry people writing to me saying, I sent you an email to mark@fallofwesternman.com, but they missed out the, so I never got it. Please don't be angry if you misspelled the email address. So that is the best way to contact me. Now, before we get into the show, I am, of course, going to introduce Jason, my superb co-host, my wingman. He's been with me now for well over 100 episodes. Who knows how he's managed to last that long? But what have you been up to this week, my friend, and who's on tap?
All good things this week. It's been a magnificent week for white well-being. A lot of things being accomplished. Great to be here with such a magnificent community and the great Unwashed, Mr. Washed. I hope I can call to him informally as Un. Mr. Washed is with us today. Great to see you, good sir. And great to be, of course, with Mark Collett, a great leader. And later this week on Friday, Hireth, the magnificent musician and lovely lady, will be on tap. We will be speaking with her, delving into her great work in the culture creation for our people and community. And I see that Mr. Washed has already given us a thumbs up on that. So we hope to see everybody there on Friday. But I'm excited to get into the show today, so I'll pass it back, brother.
Well, thank you very much. And that means we've wrapped up the introductions in a blistering 4 minutes and 11 seconds, the fastest I think we've ever done. So let's go over to our guest. Now, you will all know Unwashed. He's a leading member of the UK Groypers. He has become famous, or should I say infamous, for his work on YouTube. Now, I've got an interesting story about Unwashed because I first met him last year in September at the first Patriotic Alternative Conference. Now, when he attended the conference, I remember getting an email from him and thinking, who is this guy? Who is this wacky DJ who wants to come to our events? And we had a bit of an email back and forth. And when I met him, I was really impressed because Nick has a certain energy about him, a very positive energy. He's the kind of guy that is brimming with ideas, full of positivity, somebody who wants to make a change. But in a way that is very different to people who were typically involved or typically associated with the nationalist movement. And I think he is very typical of the new type of nationalist, of the new type of person being attracted to our movement. He comes from a very different background, which we'll talk about a bit today. He comes from a liberal background. He soon found out the great hypocrisies of the modern world, things that even he as a liberal wasn't allowed to talk of. And then he went down the rabbit hole and became fully red-pilled. He now produces amazing content, but unfortunately, he recently lost his YouTube channel. So that is something we are going to discuss. He's also started up his own media outlet called Vile Media that he runs with Lucy Brown. So we've got so much to discuss, so much for him to promote. He's an excellent, excellent voice for our cause. He's a good friend of ours. He has won many battles in the Groyper Wars, especially against Mike Graham. I believe that Unwashed was one of the key people behind those who sent Mike Graham scuttling to his house on endless flu leave because he couldn't dare answer the phone. So without further ado, hello, my friend. Please introduce yourself. Tell us where we can find you. Tell us a bit about yourself. And let's talk about how you got involved with Patriotic Alternative and what brought you to this movement.
Oh, let's go for it. I mean, how do I beat an intro like that? This should be nerve-wracking because it's, you know, the biggest channel to appear on in this movement. But I know both of you guys now, and you've been so welcoming since the beginning of doing this, that this kind of just feels like hanging out. It's actually not phasing when you would think that it would be. But yeah, so I met Mark for the first time at the first Patriotic Alternative conference. And yeah, I definitely represent someone who's moved the whole way down that red pill journey in a quite short space of time. This is all since the Brexit referendum. That's when I started noticing. And then you keep on noticing things. And then you end up here if you just dig at the truth. But it's also the caliber of people. I mean, I was just a viewer when I went to that conference. And then after going to the conference, it was clearly a real life thing. I was meeting people in person. And that gave me the gusto to get involved. Then obviously seeing just how passionate the online community is for this and how excited they are, that's just propelled me further. And then 2020 has just been a rocket. It's been amazing, particularly in the UK. Like, as you say, this Groyper thing, we looked at what Fuentes was leading in the States at the end of last year, and we saw that energy and we thought, that's brilliant. Something can be done with this, because it was in person. It was people just getting up there with their own faces out there, which is an act of bravery. Fantastic optics on that crowd. And we just thought, right, how can we use this? And it took about 6 weeks for the dust to sort of settle before we started landing on some really, really good ideas. And the first one was, as you say, Mike Graham. And anytime, like, I can't take any credit for these phone calls because I've done, I've sort of confronted a few people on different things, but I'm not leading the radio calls. That's really Natty that's been leading the radio calls. They even know him on LBC right now. They know him as Edward from Truro because he's just always on every morning, dropping our talking points. But I was basically a cheerleader for anything like that, any kind of success like that, like when Harry went up against Dan Hannan, any of these, I'll take them and try and show everyone what we've been doing and get people excited and motivated to do more. I'm basically the hype man for the UK dissident right, I think, in a nutshell.
Well, that is a very good intro. And you are, but you've paid the price. And this is the interesting thing. You are someone who had a pretty meteoric rise and your channel took off very quickly. You had a lot of quality guests. You were producing excellent content. You were coordinating the Groyper movement or helping to coordinate the Groyper movement along with people like TR Talk, which is now Patriotic Talk, Chris. You were doing it with Natty. You were doing it with Mad Faz. You were doing it with Charlie Big Potatoes and other people. I know I'm going to forget somebody now and I'm going to get roasted for forgetting somebody important. But please, if I have forgotten your name, I am sorry. But you were helping coordinate this and this was having a huge effect. And all of a sudden, your channel disappeared very quickly. And since then, you've sprung back to life on DLive. Now, I think this is very, very important because obviously a lot of people have lost channels. A lot of people have disappeared from YouTube. But how are you finding it on DLive? How do you find that platform? Do you find you suffer the same level of interference? Are you getting better numbers? Are you getting worse numbers? What's the interface like? Tell us a bit about it, because I've just set up a DLive channel. I'm going to drop the link to my DLive channel in the chat now so people can sub to that as well. But tell us a bit about your experience there and how you felt when you lost your YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, let's go through the history of me on DLive, which is pretty brief. It's quite a recent thing. But I think I lost my channel for a week when, after publishing a conversation between Charlie Big Potatoes and Tommy Robinson, then they came after me and got my... I think my channel got lost for a week, but I'd already started streaming, and that was an expected thing of me. So it's like, how am I going to do this? So I set up a DLive, and got the word out on Telegram and Twitter and all of the other avenues, because as long as you've got loads of methods of communication, you can still get the word out. And a good amount of people followed me to DLive that day. Just on the first day, it was like 5/6 of the probably more than 2/3 of the amount of people that would have been following me on YouTube every day were like, okay, we know where to go now. And then I got YouTube back and I streamed to both of them. But recently I've been trying to get everyone onto DLive because our time is short on YouTube. It's not fun making content with all these restrictions. It places you in this sort of fearful box because we don't know what the rules are. Like, you can take a guess at some of the rules, but you never know which video is going to get taken down for what reason. So you basically just you delete every stream from a Wednesday night just to be careful, even stuff that wouldn't tread over the line. So DLive, it has that freedom. I don't think it's an explicitly free speech platform, but it does seem to be free of the ideological problems of YouTube. So now that I've got the bulk of my audience there, because what I do is I do a 2-hour show and I do the first hour on both of them and then delete it from YouTube. So if you want to watch me, you have to continue on DLive. And now I get about 2/3 of my viewers on DLive or more. And the real key is getting these alt tech platforms to thrive rather than just being a sort of alternative to the main one, because now that we've got the community on DLive, I can see Weirdos Unite in the chat who thrives over there on my channel. People seem to love the stickers over there. They love the lemon game that's going on. I get to open the lemon chest and everyone gets some lemons several times a show. And most importantly, they don't seem to interfere with us. So I'm sure we have to be careful. But if Nick Fuentes and Red Ice are consistently working over there, then I'm sure it can work for us as well.
But you're not completely gone off YouTube, are you? Recently, you have started your own media startup with Lucy Brown called Vile Media. Now, that's an interesting choice of names. Tell us about how you came up with that and what you and Lucy are going to be doing with that brand.
Oh, well, Vile Media is definitely not related to any pre-existing company that may or may not have been set up by Gavin McGuinness. It's got no link to anything that might exist already. It's using the word vile, because it's in every single piece about nationalists, and we're now playing bingo with it. You can see it on Twitter. When they talk about us and our opinions, they always use the word vile, and I think it just means nationalist. So we basically just claimed it and gone, okay, we're vile, let's go with this. And it's very quickly spread. I mean, I did just sort of wake up on a Saturday and went, huh, I think we're onto something here. And then we spent the weekend building the website. And it's become a great portal for people to submit articles. And I think we've got a nice different space to the kind of articles that PA has started doing, because you've recently started pumping out great articles on your blog. And I hope that we're expanding into a slightly different space. As you said, we operate in different ways. And hopefully we can reach as many people as possible by just sort of, I don't know, acknowledging those differences and working with them. But we've also started doing a sort of comedy sketch show every Sunday, which has become the thing that I most like working on in the week. Because everyone needs some white pills. Everyone needs cheering up. And it's so much fun. It's so much fun to try and be funny. So if people want to submit articles, then go to vilemedia.co.uk, go to the contact form. We've got a watch tab full of the videos that we recommend. We got the read tab, which has a different article every day. And they were supposed to be like kind of piss take funny ones in the beginning, but then they've taken a much more serious and deep tone since we've started. They've got really good submissions. And then there's a listen tab as well, where we put up a mixtape every week. So I don't know. I hope it's something fun for people to look at.
Now, what kind of comedy should people expect to find on your programs? People haven't seen it before. I mean, I have. So, but what kind of comedy? And are you trying to do different types of comedy? So that you hit all the different areas of where, you know, folks might be interested.
Well, it's a combination of nostalgia and stuff that's just for us. So in jokes, there's a lot of in jokes about stuff that might have been, take a clip from a stream from that week where someone said something particularly funny. Any of the little Twitter conflicts, any of the memes, we can have fun with that. And that makes it ours. And it's quite nice to be in a club with that kind of shared thing. Yeah.
Actually, that's before you, just if I could jump in, and I want you to continue, that's actually something that I was hoping you would say, and it worked out beautifully. Mm-hmm. Because that's the kind of thing that causes people to want to find out, okay, what's the joke? I don't understand why I don't get this. So what is everybody laughing to? Why is this so amusing? And then folks want to find out more. So I encourage more of that. But yeah, please continue.
Well, yeah, that's sort of a part of it. I want it to be a bit of a secret weapon where you can send it to, like, maybe not a normie. It might be a bit of a blunt instrument to a normie, but someone who started on the journey, they might find half of it really funny and then not understand what the other half is talking about. And you just go, well, the rest of the audience do. So keep reading, keep learning. But the other half of it, along with the in-jokes, is the nostalgia and reclaiming British culture. Because people talk about sort of going back to the 1950s or whatever. And we've discovered you actually only need to go back about 5 years to find material that was on mainstream British television that wouldn't be allowed now. So we're just snatching all of that and plonking it in there and going, look how quickly it's changed. And don't you miss this? Don't you miss when it was like this? Because progressive culture is all about finding the next thing and moving on and all about change. So we're kind of the opposite. We're looking back and going, yeah, remember this? Wasn't this good? Wasn't this better?
That actually is a really interesting point, because it speaks to what we talk about often in Going Free, which is it's not enough to be anti-white enough today. You have to be anti-white enough for all time. So it's all of the years to come, you have to be anti-white enough. If 3 years from now you were anti-white enough today, it's not going to be anti-white enough in 3 years or in 5 years. And you'll be able to, especially if you're a white person, they'll be able to fire you because you weren't anti-white enough 3 years ago, 5 years ago. And I often give the analogy that in 10 years, they'll be able to fire your white ass because you were at a golfing club that was 90% white. You were at a golfing club that was 95% white, and you weren't showing enough anti-whiteism. So yeah, this is fantastic. You know what, if you haven't done it yet, I haven't seen it at least, but something that might be fun for the comedy is predictions of 5 years from now in the comedy.
That, because loads of people have done that, haven't they? Loads of people have done that. I mean, one of the shows that's very influential to the both of us, to me and Lucy, is Nathan Barley, which came out in about 2004. I don't know if you would have seen it, Jace, because it's quite niche British comedy. But basically what it was taking the mick out of British hipsters. But what was so bizarre about it was it came out in about 2004, but the hipster wave actually hit about 6, maybe even 10 years later. All of the stuff that was in this show was all over London and all over every city. So they must have been right at the start of when this stuff was emerging, because you watch that show and you presume it must have been made much later than it was, because it just predicted everything. I think you can see where this stuff is going. I think you're right.
I think it also accelerates very rapidly. I think that's the point Jason was making, that it always starts about equality. People always say, oh, well, it's just about equality. But once they get closer to equality, it soon morphs into something else, which is about superiority. And the group that simply wanted equality at first ends up claiming superiority later down the line. And the people that the social justice warriors once said were second-class citizens have now not become equals, but have become first-class citizens, and we've become the second-class citizens. And I see this all the time across a lot of different types of media. And it's infesting computer gaming now, just as it's previously infested television shows and movies. And you can see more or less everything that you loved being twisted, being turned, and being really loaded with agendas, which are absolutely anti-white and very often anti-male as well. There's a kind of a general attack that ultimately you can attack straight people, Christians, white people and men. And if you're a straight white Christian man, oh boy, are you in big trouble. That is it. You're sort of the lowest of the low. You're basically setting yourself up to be an absolute target for all of these people. But I think there is a large degree of pushback against this now. And I think some of these companies are going far too far with what they're doing. But I wouldn't say we need to just go back 5 or so years, because I think if you actually trace back what has been planted in many of these films, you can start to see the seeds of this anti-white narrative being planted many, many, many years ago. And only now are we seeing those seeds becoming fully grown trees and bearing fruit of their own. And I think that we have to say that this isn't just a matter of turning back the clock. I know people often say, oh, if we could only just go back to the 90s, oh, if we could only just go back to the 80s. I'm not particularly interested about going back to any particular time. I'm more interested in smashing the system, destroying the mainstream media, and creating something better in its place, because I don't believe that we should be a reactionary group or a group that looks back at different periods of history with rose-tinted glasses. We should be a group that looks forward to the future but seeks to create something different and fresh in that future. And I think that if we turned back the clocks to even as far back as the 1960s or the 1950s, it wouldn't really make a difference in the long term. It would just push back our fate another 70 years, because 70 years later, we'd still end up being here, because that's when the seeds were sown. The seeds of this madness were sown in the 1950s, the 1960s, when soaps like Coronation Street began. And people say, oh, well, it wasn't, Coronation Street wasn't, it wasn't like it is today. Well, no, it wasn't, but that's where it started. And what you have to remember is when Coronation Street showed the first depiction of adultery on British television, by today's standards, that does seem very, very milquetoast. It seems possible. So what, you know, so what that a married man ended up kissing another man's wife? Who cares? It's that's small fry, Mark. We're talking about bigger things now. But what you have to remember, at the time, that was outrageous. And once they've broken one barrier, they seek to break another barrier and another and another. But once they've broken that one barrier, and it might take them a long period of time to do so, the next barrier they break, they do so in quicker time. So they're breaking more barriers in a shorter period of time. And as I said, I'm not about rolling the clock back. I don't have rose-tinted spectacles for other periods of history. I want to look firmly forward to the future, but I want a future without the mainstream media. I want a future without Hollywood. I want a future without computer game companies that want our children to, you know, play as transgender characters. I want us to shape the future in the way that we would like it to be. And I think that's a very important thing. And I'll just throw this back. You were saying about, before I pass it back to you, you were saying about things on TV 5 or 6 years ago. It's funny because you look back now at films, say like Terminator 2. Now, Terminator 2, I'm not saying it's not a magnificent film. It is, and for many reasons. I mean, the special effects, fantastic, and they still hold up to today. The story is brilliant. It's one of the few sequels which was arguably better than the original film. And it does a lot of things very right. But there is that scene where the most intelligent man in the whole film is of African descent. The scientist who creates the Terminator, the genius, the man at the head of Cyberdyne Systems, isn't of European descent. And what I'm saying is these little seeds, these little sort of breadcrumbs were present then. And if you follow those trails or you see where the breadcrumbs lead or what the seeds grow into, you now see they've grown into a mighty social justice tree which infests everything. And I think if you did go back 10 or 15 years, which I have done with films, I've gone back even further. I now, being red-pilled, do spot little things in these films that are subtle nods to what would come in the future. What's your opinion on that?
I think The Breakfast Club was probably the last truly white film out of Hollywood. I'm proof that this incessant push can only go so far, because I'm from the completely other echo chamber, you know? I'm from the other side. That's the people that I hung out with were more politically engaged than me, I guess, just for some absolute nonsense. They were, Corbynites. And I assumed there was something in that. But then the gender stuff, I think, was the first one to fall. All this gender madness. I was like, I cannot go along with this. This is not based on truth. And as they push further and further with this, more and more people are just going to say, this is nonsense. I'm sure the general public thinks that this is all nonsense. But the problem is how insidious it all is. The problem is that the mainstream media will give us someone like Piers Morgan and get us to focus on the end of the wedge in terms of gender madness. Here's a guy who's justifying that anyone can be whatever they want, and Piers Morgan is calling him an idiot. Hurrah, Piers Morgan's the voice of sanity. Whilst actually there's what would you call them? Affirmative action policies in every single company for LGBT people, for women, and for non-white people. So there is no pushback against this stuff. It seeped into the corporate world completely unchallenged. All the managers have just accepted this pronoun nonsense because it's been hoisted on them. So even if we see a pushback against the most mad stuff, it just does not give people the full picture of what's been going on, which is what we're here to do, I guess. But as the anti-white rhetoric ramps up, I don't really have much doubt that we can wake the majority of the populace up. Because I tell you what, I've been watching the Labour Party since they did so poorly at the last election. And you assumed that there would be some self-reflection. You assumed that they'd look at themselves and go, okay, what happened? What can we do about this? And actually, you just get a load of MPs of African descent in the House of Commons demanding reparations. And I'm looking at that going, you're in the House of Commons. That's the establishment. You're already there. You don't need any more. And there's no self-reflection whatsoever. They've gone even more hardcore on racialized identity politics. But the way I look at it, we're still at about, 75% of the country? So the more aggressively they go with this, the more likely 75% of the inhabitants of this country are to wake up. And even people who aren't white, like Ralph, you know, I'm sure everyone will notice the more that they push it. So, you know, I'm glad our numbers aren't too small yet.
I think when you talk about people waking up, especially when you talk about the Labour Party, now they haven't woken up or won't wake up. What you've got to remember about some of these people, and this is what many people write to me every week, and they want some advice. And I regularly get people say, how do I debate people on the left? Mark, you're good at debating people. What would you do in this situation? And I've said this many times before. I don't really debate with people on the left, not because I'm scared of what they have to say, but because I know that I won't win them over. I won't win them over because they won't move ideologically. And the reason they won't move ideologically is because they are not ideological. You see, a lot of this multicultural nonsense, a lot of this liberalism, a lot of this social justice warrior narrative, it isn't based on fact, but it's based on faith. It's a matter of faith. It's very much like a cult. It's based on the idea, which is completely unfounded in any sort of scientific manner, that everyone's equal, that everyone's the same, that everyone has exactly the same capacity, and that by bringing all those people together, that kind of diversity, despite everyone being the same, they still call it diversity, and that diversity is going to enrich us. And what you actually end up with is an argument that isn't based in any way on facts. And you can give these people all of the facts that you wish. You can give them crime statistics. You can give them statistics on IQ. You can give them statistics on the number of indigenous girls that have been groomed. You can talk about how this is driving wages down. You can talk about how it's pushing class sizes up. You can talk about health tourism. You can talk about the rise of SDIs in certain parts of London or Birmingham. You can talk about rape gangs. You can talk about moped attacks. And it doesn't matter. And I could go on all night just listing these negatives. But it doesn't matter how many negatives you list. It doesn't matter how many facts you throw at them. At the end of the day, they won't change their mind because they're part of a cult. In the same way that if you went to someone who was part of a strange religious cult and was absolutely invested in them, it wouldn't matter if you absolutely empirically proved everything in their holy book to be false. It wouldn't matter if you absolutely proved scientifically that the blessed water that their magical cult leader was giving them was just water. If they believed it was blessed water and gave them magic powers, it wouldn't matter how many scientific experiments you carried out to prove that was just normal water. They believe it, and there is no shaking that kind of blind faith. And what you have now with the left, with the multiculturalists, is absolute blind faith in the multicultural system. But you also have something which is more powerful than that. These people not only have faith, but they're willing to die or sacrifice their own children for that. And you're almost now looking at a situation, because people often talk about the Aztecs or the Incas. I don't know particularly which one it is. I'm sure I'm going to be corrected in the chat. But one of the Aztecs or the Incas used to carry out human sacrifices atop temples. And I'm sure that people at the bottom didn't particularly, well, you would have thought, why would they let their children be sacrificed? Why would you let your brother and sister be sacrificed? Why would you want a member of your family to be sacrificed atop this temple? But then you realize they have absolute faith that that sacrifice is going to bring the rains or save their people. So actually, they're at the bottom cheering as a member of their family is being sacrificed. And that's why when you have a young university student stabbed to death by a lunatic in London, his dad doesn't spend the day after that ripping on the system and saying, my son should still be alive if it wasn't for this horrible system. He spends the day defending the system and saying that the system should never change and there shouldn't be harsher laws. And essentially, that it was right that that man was on the street. Now, if you go back to my Aztec and Inca analogy, that's like having somebody at the bottom of the temple running around cheering, suggesting that his son was right to be sacrificed because that's exactly what needed to be happening to bring forth the rains, you know, to make the crops grow. And you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, we're not dealing with rational human beings. And I've been saying for a long time, with the Labour Party or with these hardcore social justice warriors or cultural Marxists, whatever you want to call them. I prefer the term cultural Marxist, but I know that you know, social justice warriors, a very accepted term these days. It's very hard to deal with these people, and I don't waste my time arguing with them unless I have a sizable audience that I can win over, which contains neutrals. Because all you're doing is arguing with some mad cultist, and it doesn't matter what you say. Because if seeing your own son murdered and die because of this system doesn't shake your thinking, what's going to? I mean, you know, and when you think about it, losing a lot of seats or not winning the general election is definitely not as bad as seeing your son murdered. So that certainly wasn't going to shake the Labour Party into action.
I could say that I've ended up where I am talking to you guys from a point of like pragmatism, from watching people debate, from watching people hash out their ideas and using my own deduction to see who I think is right. And there was also a convergence of people that seemed to really, really pick up last year. Thanks primarily to this show, because there were channels that I was watching that I presumed were disparate. And then week after week, they were on here. And I was like, okay, these people are all talking. This is a community. And they all seem to be arriving in the same point, and they're all driven by truth, all driven by, they're all honest people. For the most part, these are channels where people say, look, I don't know, but I'm trying my best. And they all seem to come to this camp. So there's got to be something in that. And when you say that there is no reasoning with the people on the other side, well, that's because they're on the opposite side to truth, isn't it? They're as far away as you can be from that. And I get loads of these comments as well. How can I red pill lefties? And I'm at the point of saying no one can really red pill anyone else. It's a walk that you've got to do yourself. Because I've only ever ended up frustrated when I've tried to drag someone down that path. And I've spent, well, a lot longer than I've known either of you, arguing with people who are stuck in the hard left. I still have a Facebook account, which is absolutely full of them. And now I've got a few of our guys on there. So we have a bit of back and forth with them. But as you say, there's no point in engaging with the worst of the worst, because you're not going to red pill them. You're not going to snap them out of that slumber. I wish it were different, but it just doesn't seem to work that way. But you said there's no point in debating these people unless there's a sizable audience that you can win over. I did have one highlight on my channel where I had a debate with a fella who goes under the name Fascists Beware. And that was worth doing for two reasons. Number one, it boosted the morale on our side massively. The chat was absolutely loving it, because I never had a debate before and it was really easy. But the second reason was it gave me an opportunity, like he challenged me on things and it gave me an opportunity to spell out, you know, well, I'm not an intolerant bigot because of this, or, you know, this is my actual position instead of the caricature that you guys like to paint of me. This is what I actually believe, which I think is a useful exercise, is taking those attacks on and going, no, I've got a rational answer for that. No, you can't paint me as an idiot. Nice try.
Well, is there anything else you want to ask Unwashed before we move on, Jason? Because we have got one particular news story that I thought was so ridiculous and it enraged me so much. there's not a lot of things that really enrage me these days because I've seen so much, but this really enraged me. So if there's anything you want to ask him, let's ask him now before I lose my temper rather publicly.
I don't want anything to get in the way of that rage. Nothing is that important, so let's get right to it.
Okay. Well, this was in the news today. Now, I've been obviously following the news for a long time, and I check the news most mornings, although sometimes I have been missing the news every few days now because it's just the same stuff, all about the same topic, and it just gets dull. It gets dull. This lockdown gets dull. When are we ending the lockdown? What's the latest fake news about something? Who have the police bullied? And every day there's something about who the police have bullied, who the police have upset. The police have done something terrible to a family out biking. The police have threatened a father who's playing with his son in their front garden. And I don't like the British police. I think the British police are a complete disgrace. But today, I read a story where they've really, really outdone themselves. Now, I want to share this with you guys, and I'm going to. So here's the screen share. Police reveal prankster as a teenage boy who dressed 17th century plague doctor. I think it's meant to say dressed as a 17th century plague doctor with beaked mask. Oh, my gosh. So here's some kid who, as a bit of a joke, has been wandering around his area in this quite impressive costume. I've got to give him that. So 10 out of 10 for the excellent costume. I mean, have a look at that. Superb. You know, he's really gone to town here. Norfolk police have now unmasked the ghoulish figure as a local teenager who had dressed up as a 17th century plague doctor as a joke. Officers said they have spoken to the boy about the consequences of his actions. The consequences of his actions. But he will escape prosecution unless he defies police to continue his display. Now, this is just absolutely enraging. Absolutely enraging. What has this kid done? What law has he broken? So let's see the best comments on here. You know, the top comment is, I wonder what law he's breaking. I'll give that a thumbs up. And a good comment here is none. This is a non-job and the police don't want to deal with it. However, some snowflake has had to go to their safe space because of the scary costume. Well, that's nonsense. The police shouldn't have even entertained a call about this. Somebody said, great costume, and it teaches people about history. Someone else, what law is he breaking? Had my grandchildren seen him, I would have used the opportunity to explain what the costume means and where it comes from. There is no hope for the world if people keep wrapping children in cotton wool. And this is my favorite comment. I'm going to give that one a thumbs up too. Great use of limited police resources. Because apparently the police are so busy at the moment. Apparently the police are so overworked. They've got so much on their plate. They're finding it so difficult in the lockdown, dealing with all of the crazy things that are going on, that they've got time to chase a teenage boy around for wearing a plague doctor costume. What on earth is going on? They've actually come down harder on this lad, on this 17-year-old boy, for wearing a plague doctor dress-up costume than they have on child grooming gangs. Is there no one else in the UK who is actually pulling out their hair with rage at this article? Here we have the police force who have the time, the resources, and the money to track down some 17-year-old kid in fancy dress. But they had no time, no resources, and no money to stop nearly 19,000 girls, overwhelmingly of Indigenous descent, being groomed last year alone. They couldn't deal with that. They couldn't follow up all of those cases of sexual abuse and rape. They just have to be left on the pile. We can't deal with them, but they've got the resources to pull out all the stops and track down some kid in fancy dress. Now, I've got to say this. The police, at best, at absolute best, and this is me being the most charitable person I can be, are absolute abject cowards. They are cowardly, worthless people who are just tools of the system and are willing to go along with things because they're cowards. And that's the best I can say about them. And at very, very worst, they are complicit in some of the worst crimes that have ever taken place in this country. So it's one or the other. They're either cowards or they're complicit in these horrific grooming scandals. And the officers, if we were to ever get to power, the officers who tracked down that 17-year-old lad should be immediately struck off. They should lose their damn pensions. And the people who ordered those officers to go and get that 17-year-old lad should not only lose their jobs and their pensions, but should be tried and potentially jailed for wasting public money and misappropriating their position, totally abusing their power. This is yet again another slap in the face to tens and tens and tens, hundreds of thousands of English girls who are victims of these grooming gangs. And I am absolutely appalled. As I said, being in this as long as I have, not many things enrage me as much as this has, but this really pushed my button. And out of all the news items I've seen in the last few days, it got my blood pumping. So let's go around the group. Unwash, what do you think to this absolute nonsense?
Well, one of the sort of scariest revelations when learning all of these things over the past few years for me was discovering that Islamophobia, or this war on Islamophobia, is basically this enormous game of shoot the messenger. And I know that people think what they think about Tommy Robinson now, and we know more than we did. But at the time, you know, that was one of the first issues that I started raising concerns with the people around me at. And immediately, I'm a racist, I'm an Islamophobe for even daring to suggest that this man might have a point. But the way that that whole campaign worked was keep all the attention on one man, demonize him, and demonize the group that are all faced at him, so that no one looks at this stuff. No one will ever notice this problem. No resources going into fixing this stuff. Just demonize the messenger, shoot the messenger over and over again. Meanwhile, you got cases like this, and this is exactly the same as Count Dankula or Alison Chablow. This is someone made a joke, and police money is going into tackling this. I mean, I do think it is a war on humor as well as just being plain idiotic. I think that they are trying to crush our spirit with stuff like this. A few years ago, it was all about people knocking on people's doors for what they tweeted, at the same time as more and more of us are learning about the grooming gang crisis. I have no faith in the police anymore. There's been a few times within the last year when I would prefer to have been able to go to the police, because I had been threatened for one or two reasons. And I realized, oh, I couldn't, because I walked into the police station and saw big old rainbow flag. And I thought, huh, well, the person that's been threatening me, it's because of my channel. And if the police need that information, they're going to have a look at my channel, find out I've been critical of the LGBT agenda, and I'll be the criminal then. I'll be the hate criminal, not the other guy who's been, yeah, sending me threats or whatever. So I don't feel like I can go to the police for really anything. Yeah, they're a useless force. It's absolutely disgusting. Every time Cressida Dick opens her mouth, I don't know if you've seen press speeches from this woman, Mark, but it's all big diversity. That's all she seems to care about, is getting a more diverse police force, which, as far as I can tell, means that we're going to have a police force with less allegiance to us, less ethnic interest in protecting us, and also much less upper body strength if you get loads and if you make it 50-50 male female. It's idiotic. Yes, it's happening in the police force and the fire service, and it's happening to make it less effective. It's not happening by accident or because there's an idiot at the top. It's happening to dismantle the whole thing and make it ineffective. That's my two cents on all of that.
There are a couple things I could very briefly just speak to here. The first is, what becomes crime when crime becomes legal? So that's kind of a deeper question. I don't know if we necessarily want to pursue that, since we're trying to have fun here with Mr. Unwashed. But it nonetheless is one of the questions that can at some point be investigated, because what does become crime when crime is legal? And I think it, at least in part, and what we can say just to impart to people, is that for white people, we have seen law becoming stricter, while it has become looser for non-white people. And irrespective, I mean, we see the amount in the United States, for example, the police here are not quite as bad as they are in the UK, not yet. In some places, yes, but in other places, not quite that bad. But what we do see here is that when you have I don't know the race of this young man, but if he got into severe trouble, then my bet, my money is on him being white. And that is indeed what we see in the United States. When whites are arrested and or when they are questioned, etc., for a particular crime, the laws are applied to them more strictly than they are to non-white people for various reasons. First of all, white people, we've never shied away from harming criminals in our midst. You can look back throughout our history. We did awful things to awful people in our midst. And that's because we are a people of law and order. We are, you know, an Apollonian people. We want to see peace. We want to provide an environment where people can go out into the world. They don't have to worry about things like being raped. But when we see this application of anti-whiteism across from the globe, across all Western civilization, we see that the non-white people, not necessarily just because of the laws, but because of the application of the anti-white morality, that all laws are interpreted and applied, and sentencing and punishing is applied, informed by the morality, so-called morality, of anti-whiteism, which means kid gloves for non-white people and severe punishment for whites. We had just a couple years ago a judge in New York who's retired and came forward, and of course, no news about him now. But he came forward and said that he had sentenced a white man for far longer in jail. And now he was working to help get this white man out of jail for far longer in jail because he was angry with white men. This was a white judge who had done this. He was so anti-white. And the other thing I'll just say is for food for thought for everybody is that when it comes to the police force and this is what we're seeing in the UK, and you see in Mark's passion there, you will see everywhere if you apply this rule, and that is that when you have a system that purges a certain group of people and rewards another group of people, you end up with a self-selecting system so that those who are good and honorable, who want to serve their fellow man in the UK, they're not going to apply to become police officers because they know that they're going to be just purged from that system. They're not going to be getting the promotions. They're not going to get the elevation in pay. They know that the only way to get ahead is to be anti-white. And those people, as a consequence, are going to be the ones who show up in force. And they say, yes, of course, I'm the kind of person who will let the people who show up on the beach do whatever they want. I'll give them money out of somebody else's pocket that's working for a living. And yet when the 16-year-old shows up or 17-year-old shows up in a little costume, the white kid, well, we'll throw him to the ground and beat him senseless. So that because that's what they want to do inside themselves. It's not just to get the promotion. So you end up after the purging with a self-selecting system. And you see that most prominently now in the UK police and in the United States and the teacher unions.
Wait, I've got a question for Jason though, but because if the judicial system is so harsh to white people compared to people of other races, then why are the people of other races, why do they make up such a disproportionate amount of the prison population? That doesn't make any sense.
It wouldn't make any sense, except first we have two things to rely upon, my good friend. That is number one, everyone's personal experience. And if people are being honest in the conversation, most often they're not, especially if they're anti-white. If people are being honest in the conversation, they will say, well, yes, my experience has been in my life that we remember Jesse Jackson in the United States when he made the very famous comment where he said, I'm walking down the street. It harms him emotionally when he discovers that when he's walking down the street in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., everybody around the world, and he hears footsteps behind him and he gets nervous and turns around and then feels relief when he sees that it's a white man. That is a lot of truth sewn into that. And that is everybody's experience. That's their lived experiences. But fortunately, we don't have just lived experience. We also have this FBI's survey they conduct every year where they call people randomly and they ask them, have you been a victim of a crime this year? And if so, what was the race of the perpetrator? They do this study to find out whether or not there has been some sort of bias in policing, some sort of bias in arrest, some sort of bias in charging. And in fact, these numbers that come from these blind survey conducted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation perfectly match the arrest record. So again, these are people being called at random across the United States. They don't know the race of the people they're calling. It's just random phone numbers. And the person on the other end says, have you been a crime this year? And doesn't matter whether you reported it or not. Have you been a crime, or victim of a crime rather this year? And then the person says, yes. And they say, yes. They say, what was the race of the perpetrator if you know? And then the person will say it was a white guy or it was a non-white guy, whatever it was. They match that up and the numbers match perfectly to the arrests that are being made across the country, demonstrating that there is no bias in policing in the United States.
Well, I don't think there is bias in policing in the UK either. And there was a report commissioned about Stop and Search in London that Theresa May, when she was Home Secretary, was actually going to use to change Stop and Search in the UK. And it actually proved that there wasn't a bias. So she didn't use the report, but she still told the police that they were essentially being racist and they had to search less people from or fewer people of ethnic minority background. And what you see here, and this goes really nicely dovetails with something Unwashed was saying earlier, or what you both said earlier, that it is never enough. You can prove that you aren't racial profiling. You can prove that you aren't stopping people because of their ethnicity. But even if you prove all of that, even if you prove beyond any reasonable doubt that you are not pursuing any form of racist policy or policy that discriminates against minorities, you will still be told you must target more people of Indigenous descent. Because we are truly second-class citizens. And something that really hammered that home to me, we spoke about this on Friday when I had Laura on a stream about PA. Recently, it was revealed, which is very interesting, that apparently Black, Asian, and minority ethnic doctors and nurses were being disproportionately affected by the virus that's going around at the moment. And that was something that the NHS were very concerned about. And the solution that was floated for this was to remove those doctors and nurses from frontline activities, essentially stating quite openly that they would rather that white doctors and nurses died than Black, Asian, and minority ethnic doctors and nurses, which tells you all you need to know. They weren't concerned that the white doctors and nurses who would be taking those frontline roles in the place of those minorities were going to die. That wasn't their concern. Their concern was that the minorities didn't die. And that tells you exactly how they see us. They see us as completely disposable because they would put us on the front line. They would put us in the firing line. They would put us at risk before they would put them at risk. They aren't colorblind. They are absolutely aware of race, not only as a concept, but also as a hierarchical system. But the hierarchy isn't what the left claim it is. It isn't a hierarchy where we, the Indigenous people, sit at the top. And there could be a good argument made for that kind of hierarchy because it is our ancestral homeland after all, but we're not top of the hierarchy. And it would be argued that we're not even on the second rung of the ladder. We're on the lowest rung of the ladder. We are the lowest of the low. And if anyone has to die, it's us. And they aren't just saying this privately. This isn't just a whisper. This wasn't just a botch. This wasn't just something somebody said and retracted. This is actual policy. This is what they think. Our lives are worth less than theirs. And they don't even mind saying it. This isn't some taboo. This isn't something they'll apologize for. It's just their policy. We aren't worth what they are worth. And this, again, we were talking about the seeds being planted. You know, how long was this? Well, there's going to be special events for them. There's going to be events you're excluded from. There's going to be special benefits from them, for them. There's going to be special kinds of funding that you can't apply for. Oh, and now you can die and it's not really a problem, but they can't. We must protect them. Look how it's evolved. And it's evolved, again, as Nick was saying earlier, it's evolved very, very quickly. This isn't something that has taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. It's taken less. It's taken less. Well, since the end of the Second World War, that's all. Since the end of the Second World War, I think by the time we reach 100 years from the anniversary of the end of the Second World War, Europe will be in a state of complete and utter ruin. And you will say that that century from 1945 to 2045 was the 100 years that defined the downfall of Europe and the downfall of Western civilization. Does anyone have any takes on that little news item before we move to the super chats? Because we do have some.
Well, I was going to talk about sort of the NHS at the moment, because that was the focus there, was how we're chucked right at the bottom of the pile while this this COVID thing is going around, no matter how big it actually is. That's a whole other issue. One thing I will say about it is that it has put genetic reality and race realism front and center. Like, with these news stories flooding in, at least we can wipe away the idea that race is a social construct, which I think is peddled everywhere. And this is just stark proof that everyone has to accept that that ain't true. So that's a good thing. But we're living in peak clown world right now, where the NHS has become a new religion, where every Thursday night people go outside their doors and bang pans as some bizarre form of prayer to the National Health Service. And they need to have a serious look at the word national again, because we are nationalists. We're the most demonized people politically in the country, for sure. And yeah, that word is, you know, anathema to so many people. And yet it's right there in the name of the National Health Service, which is currently being praised to the high hilt, whilst saying that anyone who's not white needs to be taken off the front line. And let's get clear about the word white in this scenario. They mean anyone who's not Indigenous. They mean anyone who's not an Indigenous, you know, someone who's not part of the nation. Because the word nation comes from an ethnic people. So it's supposed to serve us. And it's just us serving the other populations. And it's the same with any kind of reparations argument from the Labour Party as well. It's purely a transfer of wealth from the natives to the immigrant population. And for it to be done through the National Health Service, where it's not even money anymore, it's just who gets to live and die. I just hope it wakes people up. I really do.
One thing I'll tack on really quickly, Mark, before we move ahead, is just this. In the United States, we have something called the Ferguson effect, which is, and it was around long before Ferguson, where white police officers are hesitant to arrest and punish and treat harshly non-white lawbreakers because they run the risk of losing their entire careers. So we have the Ferguson effect, and we also have the equal outcome objectives of anti-whiteism. And that is, of course, could be one of the things motivating the police force in the UK is, yes, they're going to have to arrest certain non-white pickpockets or or murderers or whatever. They can't just let them go that particular time. So they end up with arrest records, arrest rolls that show far more non-white people percentage-wise per capita than white people. So they have to make up the difference so that they don't end up with an outcome that is unequal. And we see this now in education, punishing students as well. It was very easy in the beginning to say, just as you're pointing out, Mark, a little earlier, to say, well, we're just going to bring the non-white people up to the students up to the performance of the white students. And they found they couldn't do that. So they just brought the white students down. So in law breaking, they say, well, we're just going to let a percentage of the non-white people walk, and we're going to charge with crimes things that would otherwise not be crimes whites, so that we can bring their numbers up, so we can have equality of outcome. And of course, that speaks to, and this is very important for everybody to understand, and I'll pass it right back to Mark, that speaks to a lie, one of the pretexts, a mean pathogen of anti-whiteism, which is at its root this idea that all of the different races of man are the exact same. That's not something that they actually believe. That is a pretext they put forward to harm you, white man and white woman. So it's based on that particular pretext that they then move forward to another level of harming us, which is equality of outcome. I pass it back.
Thank you. Well, let's do some super chats. And if you I felt a bit black-pilled by this show. You're not going to be any happier when I answer this first super chat. Bertha Mason says, is there any way that we, the public, can put pressure on those in power to speed up the process of Patriotic Alternative becoming a political party? Write letters, ask for explanations, make an argument for democracy. No, the Electoral Commission have just rejected our application for the second time. Hilariously, for something that was in the Constitution all along and they never told us was wrong the first time. These people are an absolute joke, an absolute joke. And I'm going to write back to them this week and I'm going to say, we've had this checked by a solicitor, which we had. This was in the Constitution originally, and you didn't tell us there was a problem with this particular part. Is this the only problem, or are there other problems? Because it seems like you're impeding our chance to take part in the democratic process, which itself is illegal. Now, the interesting thing about this, and I just want to throw this out to some of my critics, and I sat with a bit of a grin on my face, because most of these critics are a complete pea-brained, CivNet morons. And I'm saying this to them because over the last couple of weeks, people have criticized me for a number of things, and people have said to me, Mark, you would never stand a chance when it comes to elections. Look at all the things you've said. Look at the pictures of you and that tall girl with the tattoo. Look at the things you said about the book. Look at the things you said about this or about that, or your little jokes about a certain period of history. You wouldn't stand a chance. Well, if I wouldn't stand a chance, if I was so damn toxic, they would let me stand so I could be humiliated. If they weren't scared, they'd let me take part. If you think the person entering the race can't beat you, if you think the person entering the race doesn't have a chance, you don't have a problem with them running in the race because you know you're going to beat them with ease. The only time that you start to fear the person entering the race, the only time you start to impede other competitors and try to prevent them from taking part, is when you think those competitors actually do have a chance and can beat you. Now, the fact of the matter is, and this has to be stated, we will reapply. It will cost us more money. It will be another fee. I will have to stump up another 150 quid. That's just how it is. But I will write to them, and we will keep doing it, and we will keep doing it, and we will keep doing it. And if you feel black-pilled by anything we've said tonight, if you feel at all down in the dumps, don't. Don't feel black-pilled. Don't feel down in the dumps. Don't feel upset about any of this. Because we are still fighting, no matter what happens. And even if they never let us contest a single election, even if they ban me and say, you will never, ever stand in an election and pass that as a law, I'm still not going to give up. I'm still going to create a community. I'm still going to put pressure on these people. If we get 100,000 people on board with us who all want to change Britain and they won't let us stand in an election, then we'll just march to Parliament. If they won't let us stand in elections, we will all spoil our ballot paper on the same day. Or we will start leafleting in elections, telling people that we can't stand. And we will keep fighting and we will keep pressuring until something changes. Because we're never going to give up. It's as simple as that. And there's nothing more white-pilling than coming on a show like this, seeing 1,400, 1,500 people watching on this and Entropy and many more watching on Radio Albion and knowing that this message is traveling further and further. Just remember, over 6 months ago, there was no Patriotic Alternative. There was no conferences. There was nothing happening in Britain. There was a few grifters running around, getting nicked and asking for your money, but that was it. There was a few people running site, telling you that they were going to go into ethnic minority areas to create a bit of a ruckus and you could fund them on their bizarre little crusades. But there was nowhere for you to meet or become part of a community. There was no camping. There was no conferences. There was no regional structure taking shape. there is now. Everything will come all in good time. And the thing that's the biggest white pill for me is just how much they fear us. Because that is the greatest compliment of all. And people say to me, how do you sleep at night? How do you sleep at night, Mark Collett? I sleep at night knowing that myself, Laura Towler, Jason, Nick, knowing that all the people on board with Patriotic Alternative, everyone in this fantastic community, makes our enemies sleep less soundly. That's what keeps me sleeping at night. So do not despair. Do not ever feel that they've got the better of us, because they haven't. And if they think that we're just going to roll over and die because Michaela Opuku sent me a letter saying, oh, you can't be a registered political party because I forgot to inform you that this wasn't legal, even though this is exact wording of another party's constitution that we already passed. So, you know, as it is, this is all par for the course, but it does just show us they fear us. So we must be doing something right. Do either of you want to comment on this latest affront to democracy?
Well, I've got a little bit to jump on here because I've seen a lot of these arguments that, oh, there's no political route to success. And I think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what PA actually is. Because I think at the root of it, it's a network for community building. Yes, you have political aspirations, but that's so far from being the be-all and end-all of what we're all about. We just want to get to know each other first and then figure out what we can do to go from there. And I've heard all sorts of talk about like mother and baby groups and homeschooling programs and this syllabus that's being worked on. This is proper stuff. It's the stuff that would allow us to succeed in building a thriving community without even looking at national politics. You could do this on a local level, just in an area. Obviously, the aspirations are to go the whole way. But just people looking at it and going, oh, well, there's no route to political success. You're missing the whole big picture anyway. I don't think that that's your only goal in doing what we're doing.
Thank you. Well, we'll move on then to the next question. This is from Auto Nature, £3. And he said, do you think it would be a good policy to tax corporations who cannot prove that the service they provide is in the public interest? I definitely think that any party that comes to power that has the interests of the indigenous people at heart needs to completely overhaul the system of taxation. There are huge companies making billions and billions from the British public who pay nothing in tax. Some of these companies are set up in such a way that despite making billions, the government gives them special grants because on paper they earn nothing. We've seen this with companies like Amazon. We've seen it with companies like Apple. We've seen it with companies like Google. This is absolutely an affront to our people. And it just shows how broken the system is. It shows that when we have normal people really, really struggling, when we have regular people on the breadline because they're being taxed to the hilt. And when I say taxed to the hilt, I don't just mean income tax. I'm not just talking about VAT. I'm not just talking about council tax. I'm talking about things like the huge amount of taxation people pay on petrol, for example. Because for every pound's worth of petrol you put in your car, I think about 70 to 80 pence of that goes to the government in tax. This country taxes normal people to death. Yet companies that make billions in profit, not in revenue, but in profit, walk away paying nothing. And I know that there are disingenuous people saying, oh, that's a Jeremy Corbyn policy. No, that's a good policy. That's a policy that says that when normal people are finding it difficult to put food on the table, it is an absolute affront to public decency that people making billions of pounds are taxed nothing. It's a nonsense. We have a system run by super rich, publicly schooled elitists who strengthen the system which basically lets super rich, publicly schooled elitists make huge amounts of money off normal people. And if you look at the way that some of these companies operate, and I'm talking about companies like JD Sports, Sports Direct, Amazon, you look at the way their warehouses operate, these people are one step away from running Victorian-style workhouses. They are so oppressive. They breathe down people's necks. People have no rights in the workplace. And no one will do anything about it because these people have so much money. It is absolutely disgusting. Do either of you guys want to comment on this?
You first, Jace? Anything?
Yeah, why not? Thanks, brother. And I was also just thinking about a potential idea for a comedy skit that you all could, something you could go out into the world and do. Maybe I'll share that before the end of the show. But the first thing I want to say is I absolutely agree. I am opposed to a economic system that the one that is manifest right now, and that is as oppressive as Mark is pointing out, where, in my view, there just should not be a system in place where there can be mortal gods compared to the rest of us. Anybody who has billions of dollars in their name is a god. You know, they can make a city appear, a town appear out of nowhere. They can, and to think that we're supposed to be all on the same level, where we're all casting a vote, supposedly this democracy nonsense that is thrust upon us. To have this system where you can have these mortal gods, and then they're able, with that sort of wealth, to inflict their injury upon the population for whatever particular ideology they embrace. And of course, we know that they embrace anti-whiteism because as wealthy as they are, they're still not printing the money like a handful of families. Those are the people with the true wealth in the world, those who get to print the British pound and the American dollar. Those families are the ones who have the real wealth. The rest of us are playing with the Chuck E. Cheese dollars. But nonetheless, there are going to be folks, when we recapture our destiny, white folks with genius that we are going to bring forward, and they're going to figure out an economic system where we are not being laid low. The population is treated fairly. There is still incentive to enrich yourself, and by way of that enrichment, enrich others. But a system like we have today, crony capitalism with, you know, a mixture of communism or socialism or whatever you want to call it, under any of the numerous definitions for each, is a system that is entirely corrupt. And all of these band-aids, all of these, what do you all call them, patches or something, all of these sorts of things that they put in place, like these regulatory bodies, all they end up causing is regulatory capture. The wealthy people, obviously, they just move right in. They say, who are my regulators? They're making, $90,000 a year from the poor, dumb taxpayers out there who are paying the majority for the nation. I'm just going to give them $1 million because $1 million for me is nothing. And then they're just going to side with me, and I'm going to hire these Congress people, as the senators, House members, and then they are going to pass laws that make it impossible for people to have startups to compete with me or other businesses to compete with me. But since I have so much money, I have an infinite number of lawyers to deal with all the paperwork that we are going to inflict on the rest of the world. This is what ends up happening. So we need to focus on, Mark is absolutely right, we need to absolutely take a brand new look, sweep aside with a broom of fire, as one genius in our white positive sphere has said many years ago, sweep aside with a broom of fire the current economic system that has created this environment in which individuals can become mortal gods. Final thing I'll say and pass it on to Nick is that you shouldn't feel crestfallen. I mean, all of these people who are saying, well, you know, Mark can't accomplish this or Mark can't accomplish that. These are the naysayers we all have in our lives. Nick has had them in his life. He's had people saying to him, you can't do this. You can't be a great DJ. You all have had people in your lives saying, you can't accomplish X, Y, or Z. And when you listen to them, they were right. What did Henry Ford say? If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So in business, I've had my entire life, and I've been put in positions by wealthy people to manage their businesses. And I've had people say, oh, you're not going to be able to do that. Oh, that couldn't have been done. That can't be this. And what would I do with those people? I immediately shunned them. I didn't listen to another thing they had to say. Instead, I listened to people even when they were dreamers, and I allowed myself to dream as well, which is what I've done with the White Positive Sphere and the material that I produce for it. I listened to dreams, my own and others, that said, maybe it can be done like this. Maybe it can be done like that. And then guess what, folks? We got it done. I'll pass it over to Unwashed.
See, I'm just thinking about what Mark said when he opened there about, oh, that's a Jeremy Corbyn policy. And I think that's a very interesting point to sit on, because we oppose the left, correct? But the left is just this big, homogenous, confused blob that doesn't believe in anything real anymore. It doesn't necessarily represent, like, left-wing economic policy. So, but the implication of us opposing the left is that we must therefore be on the right and all about the free markets, etc. But what's really interesting about, like, the Brexit vote and this Labour collapse is that the traditional left, in the UK for sure, is very identitarian. They would be very, very susceptible to our ideas, I think, because they voted for the political party that their father voted for and that his father voted for. It was a big shocker that, I mean, we all hoped for it, and we did see it coming, and the writing was on the wall, but it was still a big deal that so many people who had voted the same way for generations because of family ties, specifically family, that's the important word here, they gave up on that party. They went to the Conservative Party, but you know they don't trust them. You know that that is a borrowed vote just on the proviso that Boris Johnson was going to get Brexit done and we wouldn't have to deal with this deadlock anymore. It's such a minor issue as well from our perspective. Hurrah, out of the EU. Still got all the same issues. But I'm just, like, my goal in this, and I presume yours as well, guys, in fact, I know, is just to convert as many people to true nationalism as we can. So I look at that base, that sort of that base that the Labour Party has walked away from, and I go, those are our people, very, very seriously. We need to look at them, look at their dissatisfaction, and see what we can do with it as the Labour Party gets more and more ridiculous.
Thank you. Well, we've got some more questions. This one's for me and for Unwashed. Mark, it's from Vodka. It's $5. Thank you very much. It says, Mark, after all the crap Lauren Southern pulled last year, what are your thoughts on Unwashed hanging around with Lucy Brown? Good idea or bad idea? Ask him about the JQ. Be very careful what you say about that. But for my part of the question, I know Lucy Brown. I think she's done, she's had an interesting history, but I genuinely believe she's a good person. She's done a lot of good work for PA. She's helped us with lots of our media. And I do think she's a good person. I'm willing to put my trust in people. I've spent lots of time with her. She's visited me at my home. She's come and seen my daughter. And I have a lot of, you know, warm thoughts for her. I think she's a good girl who, in the past, has probably, like most of us, done things that they now regret. But I don't think she's ever turned on any of us. And I don't think she's ever done anything to harm the movement, not knowingly or with any form of malice. I mean, we all make mistakes, but yeah, I think she's a good person. And are you, just tell us, yes or no, are you JQ pilled?
What do you think? What do you think?
Yes or no, and then we're moving on rapidly.
Absolutely. I'll give a quick defense of Luce. Yeah. Come on. I'm talking to you guys. I'm in this circle. I'm very proud of being white. Yes, I'm aware of the tribe. So a quick defense of Luce as well. I'm not quite sure how much pro-nationalist content someone needs to produce before people will be convinced. Because I was interested in her story before knowing any of you guys. And I just see, like, she's never thrown a nationalist under the bus, yet she's done an awful lot to expose people that were our enemies. So yeah, maybe people will never trust her, but there you go.
I've got to say this as well, just in her favour, and I'm saying this not because I'm some sort of, I'm not just bigging somebody up, but she does a lot that she doesn't even take credit for. After the PA conference, there was a set of really, really well-produced snippets of everybody's speeches, the best little bits of the speeches. And one of mine, it went absolutely viral, went all over the internet. People said, oh, have you seen this little snippet of your speech somebody's made? Well, that was all Lucy. She didn't ask for any money. She didn't ask for any credit for any of that. She just did those things. And that's a big ask for somebody to spend hours and hours and hours producing top content and pushing our message out around the internet. That's a big thing. And she didn't do that because we pressured her or because I said, right, here's a couple of hundred quid. She just did it to help out. And she does a lot of things like that. And I think people need to give her some slack. Now, I've called out a lot of people who I see doing wrong. And I've been called out by a lot of people, and I've exposed the people who have called me out for what they really are. And I might be doing that again today because somebody, again, is desperately jealous of me. And I might be calling him out later today because I think there's a question about him again. But Lucy is not one of those people. So let's move on. Junta Mominari gave $10 and said, Keith Woods was sent assassination threats by a couple of parody Mossad Twitter accounts for supporting Palestine, and his account was deleted shortly after. What is PA's position on Palestine? All I see people saying is IL is based for doing something to the Palestinians. IL has nothing to do with tribal power. I'm going to answer this one because it's for PA. And we don't actually have a policy in stone yet about Palestine. But what I will say is the treatment of the Palestinian people could rightly be described as a genocide. The Palestinian people have a rightful claim to much of the land in Israel. And we are now seeing these people having their homes bulldozed. We are seeing children who throw stones at tanks being shot. We are seeing leading members of the Israeli military, and we've seen leading members of the Israeli political elite say that essentially the Palestinians can be shot, they can be sexually abused, and all of this is fair game. Now, those things that I've said are absolute facts. And all I'm going to say is, if any other nation was bulldozing people's houses, shooting their children, and saying that their women should be raped, and those people are an ethnic minority in that nation would have the strictest sanctions placed on it that the world had ever known. And the US would be sending aircraft carriers and prepping for an invasion. But because it's Israel, they get away with it. And I am for nationalists the world over. I want Nigeria to be for the Nigerians. I want Japan to be for the Japanese. I want India to be for the Indians. But Zionism is not nationalism. Zionism is hypocrisy. Because what the Zionists do in Israel amounts to war crimes. And what they want for Israel is a nationalism for them alone. And what they want for us is the very opposite of that. And if it were a Western nation, even being slightly mean to an ethnic minority, even claiming that ethnic minorities didn't have a rightful claim to the lands that they were living in, people in Israel would be the very first to start squawking about that and campaigning for the rights of those minorities, whilst at the same time treating the Palestinians worse than you would treat animals. It's absolutely terrible. Anyway, we will move on. Celtic Advocate gave £3 and said, this may not be the best question for Mark to answer given the recent events, but to Nick and Jason, what three books of Sir Oswald Mosley would you recommend to read? None. That is it. We're not answering any more questions about books. I've made my point. Go and read Where's Mrs. Bear. That is enough. But thank you for the super chat. Serena JB said, gave £3. Thank you very much. And said it was very gratifying to see PA come out way on top on a poll with TR and For Britain. And congratulations on Unwashed, who's doing great with Vile Media. Yes, there was a poll on Twitter today. I think it's still running. I think it might be still running. Is it still running? Or has it ended? There was a poll. There's still an hour left. So if you haven't voted, you can vote now. I will send you the poll. I'll put it in the live chat. Please vote. The question is, who do you support? For Britain, which is currently on 10%, Patriotic Alternative on 43%, Tommy Robinson on 26%, and Not Interested on 19%. The poll is in the chat now. We are coming out well on top. But if you would like to vote and give us one final boost, please do so now. And thank you again to Serena JB for the £3 super chat. Topias Katias gave £3 and said, What is Collett's opinion on Lucy Brown's latest video protecting and excusing Colin Robertson? What disciplinary action will she face from PA, NB? And then he says, feeble and unkempt men making prank calls is pathetic. This guy's really, really negative. And I read out his super chat because he gave the super chat and thank you for the donation. But one thing I will say is, on the issue of Lucy making that video, a lot of people have distanced themselves from the man in question. But that doesn't mean those people didn't care about him at one time or another, or still care about him in some way, or he was their friend or still is their friend. And I think people deal with situations like this in their own way. And I'm certainly not going to censor somebody for simply saying they learnt a lot from a man that now they feel has let them down. I think her video was very poignant. And again, I've already just given my opinion on Lucy. So that's that. Weirdos Unite, thank you very much, gave $3 and said, I'm not really into PA or yourself, sorry. Unwashed has an answer to the question that most won't answer. I'm not even sure what that means. I'm not really into PA or yourself, sorry. Unwashed has an answer to the question that most won't answer. Do you know what he's talking about, Unwashed?
I'm sure he'll clarify it tomorrow. He's one of my biggest DLive fans. He's basically propping me up over there, so eventually he'll own the show. But I don't know what he means about Mark and PA in that sense. I don't know. I guess I've got a fan, which is nice because I think you've got more than me. I wouldn't worry too much.
Well, hopefully it won't make me lose any sleep. JW gave £5 and thank you very much. He said, evening all, thanks for creating something which I feel welcome, wanted, and for opening my eyes to the purpose I've been looking for my entire life. Former blind liberal in London, send help. Mark, Jason and Wash, keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much, JW. And it's good to actually hear that people are breaking away from the cult. So that's another white pill. So thank you for the donation and thank you for the white pill. 156 viewer gave £3. And he says NordVPN has a special offer, 3 years for £1. Three years for one, £116, including VAT. Works on all popular platforms and smart TVs, but change your DNS as shown in their help or some things won't work. Lol. So 156 viewer gave £3. Thank you very much. And he promotes NordVPN. If you want a VPN, it sounds good. Pep gave $3. Thank you very much. What does the panel make of Michael Gove's bookshelf, David Irving and Charles Murray, etc.? Perhaps some mainstream politicians are more based than we realise. Oh, my gosh. Here we go with Bookgate 2.0. Oh, my gosh. You know, one minute I'm talking about books I shouldn't talk about, and the next minute Michael Gove's got even worse on his shelf. I think this whole thing of people being told what books they shouldn't and shouldn't read or shouldn't and shouldn't enjoy is a complete nonsense. And the fact is, I've said this before, and this is, I'll probably be talking about Bookgate forever now, but I've said this before and I'll say it again. If we allow our reading list to be dictated to us by our enemies, we will be knowingly shutting ourselves away from important sources of information that can help us. I wish I could dictate a reading list to our enemies, because if I could, I think we'd be a lot better off. And you have to remember that our enemy has done this very well over a long period of time. They have shut us off from many sources of information, and now they're getting rid of books off Barnes and Noble, off Amazon. And it might be very smiled upon today to say, Mark, you shouldn't have mentioned those three books. But I'll tell you this, in a few years' time, everything that Tommy Robinson has written will be gone from Amazon and Barnes and Noble. Everything that Kevin MacDonald has written has already gone from Barnes and Noble and Amazon and other leading book retailers. And it'll get further and further and further until Douglas Murray's books are gone. And what then? Do we all say we can't read them now because it's a bit naughty or a bit rude to be told about that? I think the answer is no, we have to do that. What do you think, Unwashed and Jason, briefly? Are you going to go round to Michael Gove's for a book reading session?
Now, I don't trust any conservative politician, but I do relish any evidence that they are more based than they let on. Like, so Yeah, was it David Irving and Charles Murray on his bookshelf? That's not bad. That's not bad from our angle. That doesn't mean that he's ever going to do anything that helps our cause, but it's entertaining to see. It's like there's a photo of Jacob Rees-Mogg that circulates with him at the traditional Britain group. And I don't know, it gives me a little bit of hope because it's like, well, at least they know, which is something. Obviously, you can't go around crucifying people for what books they've read. That's ridiculous because, what do they say about the Nazis? They were book burning. Oh, no, you can't act like that. I mean, it's a ridiculous wave of censorship. The last time I went into a bookshop and it was just a, I don't know, bit of headspace. Let's see if there's anything I might want to read. The whole recommended wall was just official Extinction Rebellion material. Hard left stuff. Why I'm not talking to white people about race anymore. Black identitarian material. Just nothing for us. Nothing that you would even consider neutral, like switch off material. I just want to switch off from everything being political and everything not representing me. Is there anything here which could be described as neutral? No, literally everything in every Waterstones and Barnes & Noble recommended section or out the front, you would have to dig so hard to find anything that could be described as a worthwhile book in there. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it because there's all these hints that establishment politicians are secretly based, but until it's working out in policy, it doesn't mean anything, does it?
I'll very quickly say that it speaks directly to this whole talk about books and what would be recommended, sort of a trapping question when it is not a legitimate question, as in, how can I grow? What did you read to enable you to come to the knowledge that you're at? Is there some way that I can emulate that? And that's when it's a genuine question, it's a legitimate question. And those kind of questions clearly should be asked now for a long time, should have been known to ask in private. But it speaks directly to the reality of what we claim is indeed the case. And that is that we live our lives according to the anti-white narrative, which has nothing to do or very little to do with reality. And has everything to do with a narrative that is foisted upon us and we are forced to live our lives by. Now, how does it do that? It does it very easily by conflating the person who has touched the book, who has entertained a book or books, conflating them with the ne'er-do-well in a fictional story that is the anti-white narrative by which we are forced to live our lives. So simply by citing a book or a particular emblem or something of this nature, the anti-whites and those, and it shows you all of these vague idiots out there are steeped in the understanding of anti-whiteism and the anti-white narrative. That's how they know to say, let's get him to say that he endorses X, Y, or Z. Because the moment he does, he's the ne'er-do-well in this anti-white narrative. So it just absolutely proves what we say about that reality.
Thank you. We've got loads of super chats, so we're going to have to move into the quick fire round. Stephen Ben Bob gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, regarding the UK police, are you aware of a YouTuber called Crime Bodge who is going to take legal action against Rotherham Police Force due to their non-action over the rape gangs? P.S. Unwashed is yet another great asset to our side. Indeed, Unwashed is. Yes, I have heard of Crime Bodge. He is excellent. Thank you for the super chat. And please, everyone, support Crime Bodge. Great channel. JC Starling gave $10. Thank you very much. Hail Mark, hail Jason, hail the great Unwashed. And everyone in the chat, love you, brothers. Love you too. Thank you for the super chat. Liam Norris said, gave $10. This is a very important point. I saw this on the news the other day, and Liam is great for bringing this up. Thank you for the super chat. He said, similar to the Plague Doctor story, Albertan police in Canada pulled their guns on a woman dressed as a Star Wars stormtrooper on May the 4th while she was advertising her store. She was armed with a toy Star Wars blaster. Yes, the police the world over are disgraceful. Supernova 808 gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, keep up the good work. Marty Morosley gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, shout out to Unwashed for his excellent work on the Vile episodes. Any comments from the panel on Keith Woods deactivating his Twitter? Was it attention from PJW, American Wignats, or Jewish pressure? I don't know. I've not spoken to Keith. I didn't realize he deactivated his account or if it was taken off him. I'll investigate that, but I will reach out to him as soon as I can. Grim Fan gave $3 and said, I was interested to hear Graham Moore, a.k.a. Daddy Dragon, who is associated with the English Democrats, call out Robinson and Katie Hopkins as shills and you-know-whos this week. Well, well done, Daddy Dragon. Come on, PWR. I actually like the English Democrats. They are good people, and everyone I've met in the English Democrats are really nice. So people often say that it's divisive to have multiple parties, but I can honestly say this. If you have to vote for any of the nationalist parties in the UK, the best by far are the English Democrats. Grim Fan gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, so when the NHS doesn't collapse from the removal of BAMEs from the front line, do we still have to pop bang for them? How I loathe this utter crawling insanity. Yes, that's the thing, though, isn't it? They say the BAMEs are the ones that keep the NHS running, but now they're taking them off the front line. Does that mean the NHS can work perfectly without them? It's amazing their hypocrisy, isn't it? The Thin Red Line gave $10. Thank you very much. She said, here is a little for the fee. PA for the future. Keep up the pressure, guys. We will win. Thank you very much. Ryan, 354, said, small contribution towards our next registration. Thanks for everything you do, guys. Thank you very much. A Keribu, thank you so much for this. Keribu, I think I know who this is. And if I'm right, thank you. Yeah, please contact me and I'll, you know, so I can thank you personally. But Keribu gave £150. Thank you very much. It's very generous, and said electoral commission fee, mate. Well, thank you very much. That is very generous. You know that will go to good use. Secret Sources gave £20. Thank you very much, and said, God damn it, you shall not pay all this fee yourself. People help our mark. Well, thank you very much. And as I say, this is, I just want to stress that people have been very, very generous tonight. But people often say, where do donations go? Well, the first £150 was, you know, out of my pocket. That's where money goes. You know, we don't just pocket this. We're not part of the grifter gang. We don't ask for money that doesn't need to go anywhere. That's why there's no donation button on the website. Thank you very much. Alex May gave $5 and said, well, scans are for and go ahead later in the year. I don't know. You need to ask Frody. Yiz the Eunuch gave $10. Doing great work for the British people, Mark. Keep it up. Best wishes from across the pond. Peace and well-being. Thank you very much. Ordo Nature gave £5. Extra shekels for the Henry Ford quote. But God bless PA. Thank you very much. Henry Walker gave $3. Have you ever been in contact with nationalist groups in Northeast Asia? There are big movements in Korea, Japan, China, Mongolia, who are concerned about the JQ and Southern Hemisphere immigration. I haven't, but any of these people would be welcome to come on the channel. Yiz the Eunuch gave another $10. I'm sorry, but I find that name so amusing. Regarding harshly judging those who aid our movement, we have all done things we're not proud of, and purity testing is a method of our opposition. Those who aid us and act in good faith should be given benefit of the doubt and treated with decency. That's our way, the Lord's way. I agree very much, and thank you for the donation, sir. Pragmatic Patriot said, could Unwashed explain the goals of the show he helps host on Patriotic Talk Thursday night 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. called Banter? Could Unwashed explain the goals of the show he helps host on Patriotic Talk Thursday night 8 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah, this is with Chris. I'm going to presume that you're confused about the name. All might become clear tomorrow night. We might be usurping a name to launch Chris's new show, where we're basically making sure that the internet is not safe for CivNats for 2 hours, because this seems to be a popular time. He did this last week. He had the Britisher. Well, the Britisher was doing a live stream and he'd had a pop at the far right. So Chris rang me up and went, oi, we've got a stream right now. We've got to hit the Britisher's live stream. So we did. Or he was on with Academic Agent. We fill up the chat. Eventually Endeavor got invited on, who represents our side. There's a real effect to this stuff. But Chris has decided he wants to do it every Thursday. So tomorrow, Anne-Marie Waters of For Britain is doing another live stream. So we're going to see if we can get her to talk about you again, because, you know, it just gives us more ammo. So that's the goal of that stream. So if anyone wants to have some fun in some CivNat chats, please join us. Subscribe to Patriotic Talk on DLive specifically, because that's where you'll actually find the action.
Well, that's good to know. And I do like it when she talks about us, because I've had literally dozens of emails from people saying, I wasn't even aware of Patriotic Alternative until Anne-Marie Waters released a video attacking you. I've been binge watching your videos. Is there any way that I can join? I have to say to these people, we don't even have a mechanism of donation or joining yet. But, you know, sign up to the website and come to a conference. In fact, we've had several of their organizers sign up as well. And, you know, their people are coming over, and they're coming over because they know that we are far more genuine in what we do and what we say. I think that she really shot herself in the foot talking about us, but I hope she continues to shoot herself in her other foot now and send some more people our way, because the more people we can wake up and the bigger this community, the better it is. So thank you very much. Stanley Sloggett gave $25. Thank you very much. And he said, why do you think the authorities have not named the killer who killed the 7-year-old girl from Bolton? Well, that's a tragic case. We've talked about this. The woman in question has been revealed on numerous social media accounts to be of Somalian descent, and no one wants to talk about it. But I don't know if people saw today. I saw in the news it came up as a news bulletin, sort of emergency news. There was a couple of people stabbed in a supermarket today by a woman wielding, I think it was a carving knife. I don't know if her ethnicity has been revealed or not, because at the time I found it very, very suspicious that a woman had gone on a stabbing spree in a major supermarket and nothing was revealed about potential motives, ethnicity, anything. It was just a unknown woman had done this. Has anyone seen this in the news today? I had been checking on that particular story, but haven't seen any updates. Have you seen that, Unwashed?
I actually hadn't. I'd missed this one. I've been a bit slow on daily news updates because, let's be honest, it gets overwhelming, doesn't it? But it's just more proof of an anarcho-tyrannous state, isn't it? Why would we not be allowed to know the ethnicity or background of a child murderer? Sorry, I don't remember if it was a child in this case. Not sure that really affects that much. But yeah, it's just one rule for us, a completely different rule for another. And it's just, when it's to the level of murder, oh God. I mean, yeah, there's nothing more you can say on this. I'm still reeling from the Emily Jones one, but I'll keep sharing her picture because never forget is an ironic slogan. But these cases all go out of people's mind far too quickly, and it's important to hold them there for longer and recognize this was one of ours, damaged by someone who was not one of ours, and get everyone to see it in those terms. It was on us. It's on us to protect these people, and they're not being protected. All the problems are systemic. It's not as if it's on you to rush out and figure out where someone's going to get stabbed, but we are white people. We need to collectivize. We need to change the system that we're under, else this stuff is just going to keep happening. So Emily Jones was part of our family, and so was this victim as well.
Yeah, the gentleman who was killed today was 88 years old. His wife was in the car. She suffers from dementia. She won't even understand what's happened. This is a really, really tragic case. But people are saying in the chat, no mention of the perpetrator, no description. And as the great Ann Coulter once said, the longer it takes for the press to reveal any details on the perpetrator, the more likely it is that the perpetrator is not one of us. And Ann Coulter was absolutely right. Weirdos Unite gave another $3. Thank you very much. He said, God bless you, Laura and PA. Oh, now he's being very positive. Well, thank you very much. He said, but Unwashed on DLive breaks down the finer points of being a nationalist better than anyone I have listened to. Well, look, I'm pleased you're a fan of him, and I'm pleased all of a sudden you're being positive about us. So I definitely won't be losing sleep now. I'll be sleeping even sounder. So thank you very much. OG Snoop gave $3 and said, someone uploaded this video, report it for being misleading. I don't know what the video is. It's on YouTube. Yeah. So I'm deleting that. Thank you very much. Now, that is the end of the Super Chats, but we do have questions. Connor Chickmeister said, is there any possibility of PA standing candidates in local council or parliamentary by-elections in the next few years? Well, we've been discussing that. I think we've answered that question. Etain Vac said, are Patriotic Alternative explicitly anti-EU? We are anti the EU, but we're not anti-Europeans. And I would be very open to essentially a trading bloc. You've got to remember, when Britain signed up to what became the EU. It was at the time called the Common Market. The idea of it was that European nations could trade freely without embargoes. And a lot of people were behind that. A lot of people said, well, yeah, we do want free trade with other European nations, but it became the EU. And I am certainly not against other European people. I see other European nations as very similar to ours. I see people in other European nations, our brothers and sisters, and I would certainly want to work with them in the future. But the EU in its current form is actually very anti-European and anti-white. So we are anti-EU, but we are not anti-European. I think we've made that clear. Matt V said, for unwashed, how do we achieve better nationalism? I believe you've covered this before, but how might we achieve the social renormalization for nationalism?
Okay, I've got two answers for this. Number one is holding our own community accountable. So there's a few issues that's been going on the last few weeks, and they did just seem to have ramped up where it's like, can we start really shunning people for despicable behavior? I think we generally do. I mean, it's worked as an argument against, let's say, sort of the Glenn Saffers and this whole Tommy camp that's going on. Now we don't even have to have the ideological fight. We can just point at their behavior and go, do you really want to be on that team? Or do you want to be on the team where people treat each other fairly and well and all work together? So, just don't let bad behavior slide within the community would be rule number one. And rule number two is to try and appeal to everyone, really. I'm reclaiming the phrase diversity is our strength, because I honestly believe that it is. I think the fact that me and Mark are different people is a massive asset. And every single person is going to appeal to a different cross-section of people. But the fact is, if you're interested in truth, you end up here. So all sorts of personality types should end up where we are and should be able to reach completely different groups of people. So I'm very anti-purity spiraling on my channel, but I'm not talking about degeneracy as such there. I'm not saying, go out and do whatever you want. What I really mean is don't shun all aspects of culture as they are now, because you're never going to reach anyone if you do that. If you say we should all go back and play the lute or whatever, you won't be viewed as normal. And I'm about, like, I remember you Mark said that we should never have to apologize for who we are, and it's in relation to controversial things that you or other people have said. And my version of that is I actually still like a lot of the stuff that I used to like back from my old life, the music, the films, whatever. There's so much of it that I feel has been taken from me, because everything has been claimed by the left, by the Long March Through the Institutions. Every single subgenre of music is hard leftist. And I'm so fed up of it. So I'm just going, no, I'm having that. So the term that we're using at the moment is Britnat. I saw it start bubbling up. I think it was on the Morrissey forum. They were referring to us as Britnat. And I love that term, because you know what Britnat culture is straight away. It's like John Cleese, Johnny Rotten, all of the Britpop bands from the 90s. People in the chat could probably name loads of things that they say are classic Britnat. The Young Ones, all of this stuff. I think we're in the phase of normalizing nationalism. So just, yeah, don't give up on the stuff that you used to like just because your politics has changed. That's what I would say.
Okay, thank you. We've got two more super chats. Horace gave $5 and said, we're going to need a montage, a debate training montage. Thank you very much. Pragmatic Patriot gave $3 and said, Mark, will you or will NWG be appearing in the Bunker Sundays, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Unwashed streams, or preferably DLive anytime soon? Yes, I have a DLive channel. I'll appear with Unwashed whenever he wants. And NWG, have you got any plans for a DLive channel?
I have a DLive channel, and I will happily appear with Unwashed anytime.
It depends what the topic is. The deal with In the Bunker is that I want it to be a point of disagreement, or, you know, a bit of a conflict of some kind. So we've got to wait for the topics to present themselves. I definitely both want both of you on there, but we'll have to wait until there's some good adversaries that you'd match up well against. You know what I mean?
That'll work. I'm game.
Excellent. Now, again, for another week, we've had questions regarding a particular portly clown who keeps snapping at our heels, desperately jealous that we don't want him to be part of our organization. Now, that man is known as Nick Griffin, because what he does is grift. Now, Nick Griffin has been telling everybody that we shouldn't be standing in elections and we're terrible and elections can't win. Now, if there's one thing I can't stand, it's people who are desperately jealous of others. But something I can stand even less is hypocrites. You see, Griffin has been busy backing somebody else. And this is very, very interesting. I just want to point out this hypocrisy. And I think because so many people have asked about this, I think it's time that we held this guy's feet to the fire. And I want to show you this. This is a guy called Niall the Irish Patriot. And Niall the Irish Patriot is telling people that he's raised €20,495 for his Make Ireland Grand Again campaign. Drain the bog. Vote for Niall. The 2020 general election will decide if Ireland is to live or Ireland is to die. Die through mass immigration, die through corruption, die at the hands of traitors and imposters. Wow, that sounds pretty good stuff. Are you with him? Are you with him? Well, he's been raising quite a bit of money and it's been, you know, quite successful. He had a goal of €20,000 and he raised more than €20,000, according to this site, in order to stand in an election. Oh, that's strange, isn't it? He's standing in elections, but he's being sponsored by the Knights Templar organization. In fact, Griffin's Knights Templar organization is regularly working with this guy and endorsing him. They're endorsing a guy who's raising tens of thousands of pounds to stand in elections whilst attacking Patriotic Alternative for wanting to stand in elections. Now, am I missing something here? Or is that a little bit hypocritical? Is it a little bit hypocritical to help a guy raise tens of thousands of pounds and endorse a guy who's standing in elections and then attack another group for wanting to stand in elections? None of that really makes sense unless you realize that the guy helping this guy raise money, the guy endorsing this guy raising money for elections and attacking us for wanting to stand in elections, is just bitter. And he's doing anything he can to raise money. And the only reason he's attacking us in such a vitriolic way is because he wants people supporting PA to give him money. You can't say that fighting elections in Ireland is a great idea, but fighting elections in Britain is a complete waste of time. We're either fighting elections or we're not. And I want to make it very clear, elections are not the be-all and end-all. Community building is central to what we do, but I believe we should fight elections when it's expedient for us to do so. And I'm certainly not saying that Niall shouldn't have fought in the general election in Ireland. I just find it very fishy that a guy who's helping Niall with this fundraising, a guy who's promoting Niall, is now attacking us for saying that we'd like to stand in elections as well. Doesn't make any sense until you realize what his agenda is. The guy is a complete and utter grifter and hypocrite. And that answers the multitude of questions on this particular topic. So I think that about brings us to the end of the show. But we have two final super chats. We have Yiz the Eunuch, who gave another $3 and said, "Glad you like my name. It's meant to be playful and funny. Speaking of laughs, if the UK nationalists are Britnats and we American nationalists are gunnats, lol." Thank you very much. Weirdos Unite gave another $3 and said, "Get Griffin in the bunker and bash him." Well, thank you very much, but I can't endorse the bashing of anybody. And that about brings us to the end of the show. And after the show, I'll be retiring to my own bunker to read the foremost and most important political text ever written, which is, of course, in the background now, Where's Mrs. Bear? But before I do that, I want to allow everyone to give their final thoughts. First of all, Unwash, thank you so much for coming on. Please, my friend, tell us where we can find you. Give a plug to your work and give yourself a little outro.
Yes, well, the original Unwash channel is no more. That got deleted forever. However, if you do want to see everything that was on that and has now been chucked in the bin by YouTube, you can go to altcensored.com and search for Unwashed. And somehow it all ended up over there. There's only about 10 videos that I ever did that have been missed off there. So some saint out there saved my channel. But where you can actually find me doing new stuff, I've got a new channel which I've been typing comments in. I'll just type blah, blah, blah now so that you can click on it. And it's Unwashed Season 2, which doesn't show up as readily in the search functions. But yeah, Unwashed Season 2 is where I'm going to be producing the sort of the work that was a bit more like the original channel. My main focus really is the D live streams, which are 1 till 3 every weekday. I normally do a show straight after this one, 9 till 11 on a Wednesday, but this week I'm cutting that off because I'm tired of talking after this. And then yeah, we also have In the Bunker 4 till 7 on a Sunday, which is also which has already been mentioned. For episodes of Vile, please go to Lucy Brown's channel because she's got a much bigger reach than I do, so it gets hit seen by many, many more people. So that's the ideal place for that to be. What else? Yeah, the DLive one was dlive.tv/unwashed. That's the most reliable place. And please check out vilemedia.co.uk for daily articles. And I've got a Subscribestar as well. Subscribestar/unwashed tip jar with hyphens in between. I think that's all my links. There you go.
Okay, thank you very much. And Jason, please give yourself a little outro. Tell us where we can find you and who's going to be on tap.
NoIGuild.org, theafterparty.tv. Play it back if you didn't catch it then. We're going to have Hyreth on tap on Friday. This coming Friday, make sure you come on over to our channel, The Gardening Channel, and you'll be able to watch her there. And we're going to be diving into some of her work. It's going to be a very exciting conversation. She herself is a rapidly rising star in the white positive sphere. Very happy to have her here. And I just want to also point out that Novi Hanza wanted to mention one of the phrases we use in Going Free, part of our lexicon that empowers us, and that is hush crime. When the police and the media don't report on the crime, the person who committed the crime and is non-white and the person is white, they don't, the victim is white, they don't report on this, that is a hush crime. Use that in your conversations, and you will discover that you immediately win them for several reasons. One I will just give you right now, that if there can be such a thing as a hush crime, then that means that the establishment isn't a bunch of stodgy white people working for our well-being, but a bunch of anti-white pigs working to inflict harm on us. I pass it back.
Thank you very much. We have one last super chat from Weirdos Unite, $3, and he said, Unwashed forever. Well, thank you very much, my friend. You've been very generous tonight. And that just leaves me to my outro. Thank you so much for being here. I have reached out to several people that I would like to see on the show soon. I have reached out to Gavin Bobby. I really want him on the show, the Mosque Buster. It would be fantastic to have him here. It would be really, really good to have him on. I would also love to have on Renew Britannia. I've been speaking to him privately. I want to have him on. I would also like to get Professor Kevin McDonald back on. It's been a long time since Mike Enoch's been back on, so would love to have him back on the show soon. And I also want to reach out to somebody who we've never had on, but is very amusing. And I know that one of our moderators is a huge fan of her, and that is Emily Yukis. If Emily Yukis is listening, I've tried to get in touch with you. Would love to have you on the show. Some of these people have been on before. Some of these people haven't. They are people that have been requested. I would like these people to come on. So if I have mentioned you, reach out to me. Let's get you in the schedule and let's have another great month of PWR. Now, I will have my regular video out on Saturday. Saturday, what am I talking about? My regular video will be out on Friday. So look forward to that. It's on something that isn't to do with this current pandemic. So that will be a breath of fresh air. And that just leaves me to say thank you to My good friend Jason, my good friend Unwashed, both of you tonight have been absolutely superb. Thank you to everyone who's donated so generously, and a special thank you to Caribou, who donated the money for us to reapply to the Electoral Commission. That is very, very generous. Thank you very much. Write to me privately. I want to send a private thank you to you. Thank you to everyone else who donated so generously. It really is heartwarming. And honestly, my thanks go out to you. I would also like to say a big final thank you, as always, to everyone watching and to people in this community. I love you all. You people make this absolutely worthwhile. And I think there's been a lot of white pills dropped tonight. The most important thing above all else is people. It is our community. It is standing together. It is making friends. And it is forming something that means that we can weather the storm together. Thank you all so much. Stay safe in these trying times, and we will be back same time next week for another episode of PWR. Thank you and good night, guys.